is a cloud. Hi, everybody. It's nice to see you here. And I'm just getting myself in order. hopefully. And I'm going to share this screen. And there we go. Well, the science of triangles. It ends up being so very astrological in a way. So while you are learning about the science of triangles, you're also, I guess, learning some astrology. That's what I find to be the case. We are somehow, we're at point number 8, which has been gathered together, and I'm trying to find the different pages where some of these things are dealt with, so we might get a fuller idea. Now, the very first thing that we see, well, of course, to welcome you here, naturally, with Michael Crow and Joe Waltz helping me go along, and welcome Anna and Annette and Astra and Catherine. Chris Tronka, hi, and Francois Boulanger, welcome. Georgina and Joe Garceau in this case, welcome. Karen and Nienke, welcome. Tia, hi, and Vivienne and Zanagi. So maybe some of you will, well, if you're ever late, you know, just tune in, and even though I might not read the names again, you're with us. There's a lot of thinking that goes into this science of triangles, and DK has such a profound knowledge of esoteric astrology. And we try to benefit from that, you know. That book I have made commentary on from beginning to the end, line by line, sentence by sentence, almost word for word. And of course, what I notice is that I've hardly scratched the surface. That's what it is to work with Master DK. He offers so much, and in organized detail, he really has proven himself to be a member of what's called the Society of Organized and Illumined Minds. So we'll work with whatever we can actually understand of his teaching, which is a certain percentage. Now, the Starling Hunter, he's someone who has dedicated years and years to the study of triangles. And he made this brief little compendium, and we can read a little bit about it, going from page to page. Now, the very first thing is that Uranus relates Aries, Libra, and Aquarius. And I'm going to There we go, page 247. And I trust you can see that if for any reason I'm talking about something that I have not displayed, then either Michael or Joe can let me know that you're not registering what I'm talking about. So basically what I'm doing, he says that Uranus relates Aries and Libra and Aquarius. Now, you know how that works, don't you? Think of it. Now, it's a triangle. And Uranus is the hierarchical ruler of Aries. It is the esoteric ruler of Libra. And it is, in a way, the orthodox or ordinary ruler of Aquarius. It's also one more thing, because the hierarchical ruler, which applies largely to initiates and advanced disciples, the hierarchical ruler of Aquarius is the moon. And when the moon is in Aquarius, it's a sign of potential transfiguration. And the moon operates at three levels. The highest is the Uranus level, the more emotional side. Well, that would be occult mind. And think about that. Uranus rules occult mind. Neptune would rule the emotional level, and Vulcan would rule the etheric physical level. So in a way, Uranus appears twice in the sign Aquarius, and has to do with the potential for transfiguration. What is transfiguration? Well, there's going to be a lot of ways to deal with it, but it is the glorification of the personality through the agency of the Christ forces in the soul. So we know the story there that Christ, or Lord Maitreya, he took three of his disciples out into the wilderness, and he reenacted the transfiguration before their eyes, and they prostrated themselves. You know, they had never seen such a light display. And I think it was at that time, too, that he said that Elijah is with us. And there was certainly a dark figure that was called Russell M. So an earlier incarnation of the Master Moria, and he was there as well. So there's all kinds of little, or maybe they're not so little, all kinds of mysteries connected with these demonstrations of the light. And they are beyond us right now, but we can aim towards them. When we go off into the wilderness, having been, what should we say, baptized by water and by fire, we have to overcome the temptations in the wilderness. And there are the three temptations that Christ manifested for us in the overcoming of them, and we have to overcome the devil of mental pride, and we have to overcome the flesh. Man does not live by bread alone, and we have to overcome one more thing, and that is the world, because the devil, meaning the unregenerate personality, offers us the temptations that we can have all these things. We can be worshipped. We can have whatever we want. We can be respected, and we can have in the world whatever we want. But that would be the lower we, wouldn't it? And we have to overcome that in order really to be on the path of initiation, which is in a way the Syrian path. You can't really step onto the Syrian path of true initiation unless you do your work in the desert. Now, it's not going to be the same thing as what Lord Maitreya did. He enunciated principles that stood for all of humanity, and we're just mostly dealing with the little personal self and trying to free it, shall we say. Now I'm going to try to read what I can read. Page 247. Let's see here. Yeah. Page 247. And let's see if I'm on the right page for you. I hope so. It looks like it. So, there it is. And that's the page I want. Through this planet, Uranus, sometimes Uranus is called the heavenly one, because in a way it rules the archetypal heavens. If we look at the Sea of Fire, we're going to be thinking a lot about Leo and the hierarchical veiled ruler of Leo is Uranus. So through this planet, Uranus, Libra is related also to Aries and Aquarius, and it is through Uranus, that the great pair of opposites, Aries Libra, it's got a lot to do with the great bear, are brought into touch with each other in a very deep sense. If you look on page 50, let's see if I can go there. I think you will see, hopefully, here it is, through, oh goodness, I better try that one again. And I'll show it to you. There's the great bear. And there is the Aries Libra duality. And in this case, it tells us that the sun is veiling Vulcan, and this is occurring on the cardinal cross. The Great Bear stands for the larger ashram. And the second creative hierarchy is brought into play here. Now, that creative hierarchy is one of the, I think, liberated creative hierarchies. And let's see if I can find that. I think the thing to do is to well, that might be a little difficult for me to reach, but it's much later in the book, and it's all about the super manifested creative hierarchies on the cosmic astral plane. Let's see if I can in any way find that. So let's see here. I really should have had that ready to go. Okay. And I'll bring that over here. And maybe I can find it. And if I can't find it, well, then that's that. Well, that wouldn't be the one. I don't like to spend time hunting around, you know? But let's see. I think we'll do it that way. AAB diagrams, and well, I really should have done that. Let's see here. Cardinal cross symbol. And here we go. Creative hierarchies. Oh. But I'm not sure that these are the normal creative hierarchies, but we want the ones that are above. Well, you've seen them before, and maybe I'm just not going to spend the time to look for it. I'll try one more time. So, let's see. Okay, AAB diagrams. Okay, one more time. And if it doesn't turn up for me, then I won't be able to have it. If anybody sees the place where it is, let me know.
Michael, we're only seeing like the application is blacked out because potentially you're only sharing like a specific application. So you're looking at another document hidden from us.
Okay.
So if you do another share screen.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'm a little frustrated here that I am not doing too well with this. Backup of creative hierarchies. And let's just see if there's, now you should be seeing something. And backup of creative hierarchies, and those are the symbols. Thank you, Michael, for alerting me, but I'm spending too long. So I think I just have to let it go, which is hard for me to do. Let's see what we got here. No. Right, I'm not going to take any more time. It's for some reason, I can't find it. So I'll just let that go. But anyway, it has to do with the liberated creative hierarchies, this Aries and Libra opposition. Okay, triangle compilation. Let's see if there's anything there.
Michael, we're just seeing a list of your documents right now.
That's it. And I'm looking for the creative hierarchies. And for some reason, they're just not showing up. And I don't know why. I just don't know why. Well, all right. My little nightmare here. Sorry for that. Yeah, okay. So I'll cancel that. And I'll go back to what I had. And that was this. And it was also this. This was where it said the second creative hierarchy, which I think are called the burning suns of desire, something of that nature. So I've spent too long looking for that, and excuse me, it's been a rough day here. Okay. Now, the next thing we're looking at 247, right? We're looking at 247. Okay. And I think I can go to that. Esoteric astrology. Yep. So I'm very apologetic at the moment for messing that up, but okay, here it is. So let's take a look at what is said on 247. So Aries and Aquarius and Libra, they're all via Uranus related, especially to the Aries Libra liberated creative hierarchy, just under the Pisces liberated hierarchy. Now, let's see. Through its activity, an intense interplay takes place, making for the attainment of equilibrium in Libra, of that which had its beginning in Aries. So these, you know, let's just say that if you are born with the sun in Aries, Libra is going to be a very important sign for you monadically. Okay. Aries, Libra, and Aquarius constitute, therefore, another triangle of power, which must later be considered. These triangles will, as I have earlier hinted, now listen to this, dominate the new astrology in a most interesting manner and condition the charts of those whose horoscopes are being considered. So there's other ways to look at it too. Libra is related, therefore, to five signs of the zodiac. Now, why would that be? Well, Aries through Uranus, Taurus through Venus, Gemini through Venus, Capricorn through Venus, and Aquarius through Uranus. So let's see how he looks at these five through which the sign of equilibrium, Libra, has its relation. So Aries is the sign of beginnings. The will to create is found in Aries, and also from another perspective, the will to be. So it's a very emergent sign. It is powerfully monadic sign. Taurus, in relation to Libra, has to do with desire, wanting to do something, the incentive of it, and progress through the following of desire. But that's the ordinary ruler, Venus, ordinarily ruling Taurus. When it comes to Gemini, we have duality. And we have a condition created and an interplay between the higher and the lower pairs of opposites. And finally, you know that Venus is the hierarchical ruler of Capricorn. So it begins to be a higher type of indication. It gives us initiation, or rather, let's call it synthesis at first, and it gives us the light supernal upon the mountaintop. And finally, we do attain to initiation. Aquarius, in relation to Libra, well, it's the objective we try to reach. And we, since Aquarius is the sign of universality, it has to do with inclusion. And since it works out in relation to the etheric and physical plane, it is the sign of objective service, including all on the etheric physical plane. Okay, I hope that gives us a little idea of how these all fit together in relationship to Libra. Right. Okay. This relation, Okay, let's see here. Don't get tangled up in your cords. Okay. Now let's see where we were. Yeah. Here we are, I think. And we'll go again to page 247. Hopefully find something. Right, there we go. And I'll make sure that you see that. Yep, you do. Okay. Now, this relationship with all these triangles is established by the three rulers, Venus, Uranus, and Saturn. Let's say that the Saturn rulership is not just, okay, someone don't stop the recording. Okay. So, when you look at Capricorn in relation to Libra, you realize that Saturn is one of the great planets of initiation. And it is the hierarchical ruler of Libra, and also the regular and esoteric ruler of Capricorn. It has a lot to do with attainment and with those two planets together. Saturn and Venus are very important in the whole initiatory process. Now, this relation is established by the three rulers, Venus, Uranus, and Saturn. These five, with Libra at the point of balance, create, now watch this, one of the six-pointed stars of evolution, and also bring into relation with them three planets which are peculiarly concerned with the expression of the Christ consciousness in the world. Now, does that make sense to us? I hope so, because after all, if you think about it, Venus is the kind of alter ego of the Earth and sets an example for the Earth to follow. Uranus rules the highest archetypes, which are conceived in the mind of God, our planetary logos, or even our solar logos. And Saturn is the method of attainment. We fulfill all of our duties. So when you look at these three, maybe, you know, in your own chart, you might have the three of them in some kind of interesting relation. But you can study their interrelationships and see how they are working. Now, you know, some of us were born at a time when Uranus and Saturn were together. They were conjuncted. And what Master Moria says is that all of Armageddon, you know, the great final battle, which some people say has taken place and others say it's coming, is the conflict between Saturn and Uranus. And in this particular conflict, Uranus, the archetype, must win out over Saturn, the condition that we have made of things, the condition. And then, of course, Venus sets the example. We want to become like Venus on Earth. We want to become like the solar angel when we are an individual. Venus is what Earth should be like. And in your astrological chart, when you want to try to spot the influence of the solar angel, or let's call it the angel of the presence, the position of Venus is very important and can be analyzed esoterically. Okay, now, these three planets are, through the rays of which they are the medium. Now, what are those rays? You know that, don't you? Venus, ray 5, Uranus, ray 7, largely, except for its first ray, monad, and Saturn bringing in the third ray, especially the third ray, monad. Now, Venus does have some soft line higher in its system, more along the 6 and 2 line. But we are in a solar system that is demonstrating the soul rather than the monad. That comes later. In the same way that the previous major solar system demonstrated intelligence and was a system of the personality. So anything that we do that demonstrates the soul in this second major solar system is along the right line. And the same for you and for me. We can talk about the monad, and maybe from time to time, there's going to be some kind of impression from a very high being level of our inner self. But the thing to demonstrate now is the angel of the presence. And do we do that? Now, we can speak the words, but what would it be like, really, to live more and more in this angel of the presence, and somehow find our center within it, whence would come also the vibration of the master, or to which would come the vibration of the master, and some a vibration of the monad, a triple influence in our soul. So there are three planets. These three planets are, through the rays of which they are the medium, all to be found upon the first major line of force. That is, if we consider their soul nature particularly, the line of will or power, and of purpose, and of visioned goal. Now let's see what he says about the three. You know, I think we profit best by going as deep as we can on a relatively small choice or selection of material. It just doesn't pay to skitter over the top of things like a water bug on the surface of the lake. It pays to go deep. Now, all the time that you are reading the Tibetan's words, you are being exposed to the magical, magnetic, highly organized, highly illumined mind of the master. And it's going to make a difference in your life and mine. It's not just casual reading, okay? Obviously. So let's take a look at Uranus. Uranus. Basically, we're told the seventh ray of ceremonial magic, yes, as a soul ray, but not as a monadic ray. It shares with Earth the first ray, monad, but in its seventh ray soul nature, Uranus is he who relates, because as we know, the seventh ray is constantly seeking out the proper relationship. We call it here the source of duality. And look at this. He who perceives the end from the beginning. Now, that is a long-range vision. And this is spiritual consciousness. In this particular case, let's call spiritual consciousness something from the soul, angel of the presence, and also something from the triad. Like the flash of lightning on a dark night, dark, stormy night, the surroundings are lit up in a flash, and you see what you did not see. Now that is Uranus. It is not sustained, but you saw. That's the point. You saw it. So this is a very high archetypal planet. And when any great god, like the Solar Logos, conceives of something, Uranus is involved in that archetypal conception. So it looks like intuition to inspiration. That's kind of interesting too, isn't it? Now, what are the different levels of meditation? Well, we can say it all begins with concentration, Leo, meditation, Virgo, contemplation, Libra, and there's all these different levels of contemplation, including at very high level, samadhi. And they subdivide even those levels. That's what the concrete mind is good at doing, you know, lots of subdivision. And then illumination for Scorpio and inspiration for Sagittarius, an intuitive sign. So we have to think of Uranus as a cult mind, but also as the lightning stroke of sudden intuitive revelation leading to the breathing in of a god, which we call inspiration. And then, of course, Capricorn comes along with initiation, and I made up a word for Aquarius, Since I couldn't find any other eyes, I just call it universalization, and then Pisces, identification. Okay, so that's the first thing. God the Father, the Heavenly One, the great archetype, somehow very much at home on the highest plane, which we can call the sea of fire. Okay. Now, what about Venus? What does he say? The fifth ray of mind. Well, the number five, of course, is also always associated with sonship, if you're responding to the higher five. God, the Son. And that is promoted via Venus, because Venus also has a tremendous sixth ray and second ray on very high levels. Anytime you read of a planet, that it is the home of some power, it's telling you about the monad. So when it comes to Venus, it's the home of the planetary logos of the sixth ray. And we know that finally it's got to be for the major monadic ray on the logoic plane. It's got to be one, two, or three. And it's just obvious that Venus is a two. But that two is affecting the five, you know? You cut the apple of wisdom, even the ordinary apple, and you're going to get a fivefold seed structure. So we're learning on our very material earth how to respond to solar logoic sonship, because we are imitating Venus, just the same way that you and I, as individuals, are imitating the angel of the presence. So it's called the Son of Mind, and it pretty well will take us to the second sub-level of the mental plane, the second sub-level, whereon the causal body is destroyed and whereon the causal body positions itself around the time of the first initiation, where somehow Venus is very important. Son of Mind, he who includes, well, that doesn't sound a whole lot like the fifth ray, does it? But it sounds like the soul, egoic consciousness. And the movement is from intellect to intuition. Well, the fifth ray of Venus gives us the intellect, but the interesting thing about Venus is that it is already responding. It is all ready responding to its own Buddhic level, emotionally considered. That is not true of the Earth. The Earth looks towards Venus, towards the mastery of the fifth subplane. And Venus looks towards the sixth. So Venus is way ahead of us for various reasons and sets the example of what it's like to live as a soul. I sometimes wonder, do any of us really know what it's like to live as a soul? I mean, we have the words, but have we been able to focus our consciousness actually within the egoic lotus, of which, by the way, Venus is one of the major builders, along with Jupiter. There's some alchemical ability with that solar angel or angel of the presence, whereby what needs to be extracted from ordinary life can be alchemically extracted and brought into the causal body, constantly enriching it. So when you think about building your causal body, well, a lot of planets are involved, but Venus is all of that quality, which is particularly necessary to beautify the temple. And Jupiter, with its second ray and seventh ray, is expanding the causal body. So if you're going to look at the causal body of an ordinary probationary initiate, it's not going to be at all the same as what the causal body of someone like the Dalai Lama will be like. And he's, I think, pretty close to the question, does he even have one anymore? Is he an initiate of the fourth degree, who would have found one of seven ways to destroy the causal body? Anyway, Venus is so terribly important in bringing us up to speed, just the way the solar angel or angel of the presence is important for bringing the individual up to speed. And I use that word up to speed because something it means something. It means that it was intended that the earth be as rapidly unfolding as its twin sister Venus, but due to errors of our planetary logos, and always the Tibetan would say, very reverently let it be said, because he knows the scope of what he's talking about. There have been errors in the development of our planetary logos through Sanat Kumara, and those errors set us back, especially through what is called the moon chain failure. Now, some of us maybe who individualized on the moon chain have had to deal with that failure. And the chaos that still sort of inhabits the earth chain is largely an inheritance from the moon chain failure. So there's a, you know, funny sense of guilt in some people about the way that occurred. Now, life was transferred to the fourth chain of the earth scheme, but still we carry with us, many of us, some kind of ancient memory of what that madness meant. There was moon is associated with madness. It's part of the fourth chain, and we inherited it on the fourth chain, and it's still here with us. Now, it's going on because I know I'm taking my sweet time here. Saturn is the third planet that we're dealing with. And we have learned that he's giving us a a kind of a progress here. Saturn, it's the third ray of intelligence, monadically. And there's lots of the soul on the third ray in Saturn as well. So, you know, when you look at God, the Holy Spirit, from a very high perspective, Saturn is connected with that. The Holy Spirit descended purificatorily on the disciples in the upper room, and then they were ready to take up their dharma in the outer world. And it's called He Who Knows. Now, when you have a planet that is largely third ray, but some first ray in there too, knowledge is very important. So, mind, human consciousness. And that is what takes us when we are animal man at first, joining the human race. It takes us from our animal instinct into the intellect, then Venus, intellect to intuition, and Uranus, intuition to inspiration. So I think it's well to memorize the progress that those three planets provide for us. Now, there's only a little bit left here. It is for this basic reason. Now, let me just make sure that you're seeing what you should see. Okay. It is for this basic reason, founded upon the above triple relationship, that Libra is the point of balance in the zodiac. Now, you make big decisions in Libra. Which way will you go? Back towards being sort of swallowed by the material elements, or forward into the tests of Scorpio? In most of the other constellations, at some stage or other, there comes a point of crisis wherein the effect of the energy pouring through the sign via the ruling planets to man is at its highest point of effectiveness. Then it is that you have to make the decision and be tested. And by the way, if he tells us that Libra is not involved in crisis, then somewhere else he tells us that it is. Anyway, this in time, this pouring through, through the sign and via the ruling planets to man, this in time precipitates the crisis, which is required. Now note this, please. The crisis which is required to release the man from the planetary influences which condition his personality. And bring him more definitely and consciously under the influence of the sign of the zodiac, from the planets to the sign. But here he says, but in Libra, there is no such point of crisis any more than there is in Aries. Now, elsewhere, he seems to contradict that. And I wonder if I can find it for you. I'm giving up a little bit on my finding abilities tonight. But in Libra, there is no such point of crisis. There is only the interlude of balance to a prelude, as a prelude to a more effective and sensitive progress on the path. But I do feel, you know, that if we read DK carefully, we will find things that seem contradictory, and we have to figure out why. It is the same in Aries. As it is esoterically said, before creation, silence, and stillness of a focus point. And that sounds like Aries. This applies to both Aries and Libra, one in a cosmic and creative sense, Aries, I guess, and the other in an individual and progressive evolutionary sense. Now, wish me luck, because I don't want to leave the field of battle totally defeated, unable to crisis, Libra, Capricorn, and there are a number of let's see what we got here. And let's see what we have. Okay, and let's see here. Well, look here. You see what I mean? And let's make sure that I have this correct for you. From this group of signs and their attendant constellations, those are the real power behind the sign, three are omitted. Now look, these are Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. Now look, these three signs are all signs of crisis. Well, and indicate the progressive influence of the other nine and the situations which evolve out of their activity. They are the testing points in the process of the play of energies from the nine signs, as these energies affect, now note, the individual aspirant. Okay, and let's just read it quickly. Leo, the crisis of individualization. Well, that was a long time ago, you know. This shows itself as diffused inchoate power, but then finally, personality integration. It signifies the emergence of personality and preparation for the Christ experience. It is self-conscious and the lower synthesis. Well, it is also much more. It relates to the final burning ground, but never think that a sign has only one area of application. It has a number of them. Now here's Libra, and he calls it a crisis, doesn't he? The crisis of balance, the emergence of a sense of self-direction and equilibrium. It is a point of equilibrium between soul and form. It signifies the emergence of free choice. It is consciousness of duality and the effort to balance the two. So what he did not call a crisis earlier, of course, we can work on that to try to explain that. What he did not call a crisis, here he calls a crisis. And Capricorn, as we are familiar, the crisis of initiation. All the five first initiations are ruled in some measure by Capricorn. This exists in five stages and signifies the emergence of the dominating Christ life. It means the higher synthesis and the control of the Christ consciousness, which is group consciousness. Okay. Well, we'll get into that. But another triangle unfolds before our eyes. Yet another triangle. And an apparent contradiction, which we will have to learn to handle. Okay, friends, so let's see what we've got here. I may, you know, I didn't really get very far, but going deep rather than skittering, if I can say. Okay, so maybe we have to put this here, and our date is, by the way, this is Bastille Day. The prisoners held in the Bastille are released. Program number 99, I guess, if I'm correct. And I hope
You are.
It's nice to be occasionally correct. And I'm not sure when we three meet again, as it's been said in Macbeth, but
it'll be in August. Next week is the full moon.
No, my. Well, here's all I can say. The programs are less frequently presented. This has something to do with a broader schedule, and also with what I can actually do, you know, somehow, and just tie it together with everything else. That's all. Just, you can do that. You can find your, you know, I've said it so many times, but you can find your way from any point in the great teaching to any other. There is a way to do that. And the more we learn about that way, the more we're going to have the ability to work with that aspect of intuition, which is called pure reason. Okay.
Well, let's give you Joe Garceau's comment, because it might take you a little bit higher on today. She says, it's fun to note that Venus is with Mars at 2021 Leo today, opposite Aquarius, and hence touching on the triangle you've been showing us today.
Good point. Very good point. And I want to say that when Venus and Mars co-join, you are really dealing with soul and personality. I mean, it's not just, you know, the relationship thing, you know, X loves Y or whatever. No. Mars is the ruler of the entire personality, and maybe not so much the ruler of the etheric aspect, but certainly of the physical aspect. And Venus is way ahead of Mars, setting an example, as Earth is also ahead of Mars. You know how it goes. Venus has the circle above the cross. Earth has the cross within the circle, and Mars has the cross above the circle. And you can understand what that will mean. You know, the matter aspect is conquered to various degrees, depending on what planet we're talking about. So actually, that's a nice coincidence, Joe Garso, because maybe, who knows, maybe it's just how it worked out that we would be discussing this a little bit. You know, after I finish this program, I'm going to find with great ease the image of the hierarchies on the cosmic astral plane. They're hiding in there from me. Yeah.
I did find one. I put it in a Word document and sent the file to everyone. They're the five higher creative hierarchies.
You did?
Yes, I found it. I couldn't find the second one. I apologize.
Yeah. No, well, but it should be there. Let's see. It's in chat, huh?
It's in a Word doc in chat.
Okay, and you know, of course, naturally, I want to know.
Let's see if it's the right one.
Let's see where PPT PowerPoint excerpt.
Yeah, you don't want that. That's just the text, but the tabulations EA creative hierarchies.
Right.
That should be it. It's a Word document.
And where? How can I show that?
Well, I think, can you open it?
I don't know.
If you click on it, it'll open, and then you can share your screen.
Okay, I'm clicking, and it's...
Yeah, and there was, while you're clicking, there was a question about the numbering, and I believe that the numbering for the lower... Each lower hierarchy has two numbers,
right?
1 to 7, and then first, 6 to 12, I think. Yeah, that's what I believe it is.
Yeah, for instance, the creative hierarchy on the highest plane, which I forget what they're called now. I don't think it's Burning Suns of Desire. It's, I think that's the second one, but it's a number 6 as well as a number 1 with respect to the, yeah, but why can't I call that, see that?
That's, you want me
crazy.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for what Joe did.
Okay. I'll just share it on my screen.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Is this what you were looking for?
Yep, that's it. And
so everybody has it. They want to download
that. That's good. Okay. So that is the Aries Libra connection. It's hierarchy number 2. But I'm trying to figure out the name of these hierarchies. This is unity through effort. And of course, we are not really there yet. The Christ himself is on the way to move to the cosmic astral plane. And all of our spiritual attainment is still very much on the normal cosmic physical plane, of which Saturn is considered the permanent atom. And in this case, with the cosmic astral plane, Neptune is not exactly the permanent atom, but a representative of it. And for the cosmic mental plane, also Uranus is a representative of the permanent atom. So, you know, I do have to apologize for that 5 to 7 minute futile hunt, but the team came through. Okay, thank you, Joe and Michael. Okay, is there anything else?
Well, let's see. You want to raise your hand? I think we... Michael Crow can handle that. I'll look for more comments. I don't see any.
I know this stuff is a little bit complex. And look, what are we trying to do anyway? First of all, we have a lot of glamours, and they block our access to truth. And we have a lot of illusions. And concrete-mindedly, they put us in a box. So we don't really get the power of occult mind ever surging on ahead. And DK has taught us the, let's see here, this triangular thing. Let's see if I can find that. Oh God, here we go again. This is Tuya's if you see, there's the diagrams from Tuya. And
I think we'll have to.
You want
to
share your screen?
Yeah, I'm
going to. Okay, so I'm going to try to share my screen. Gosh, where is. Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay. So, these diagrams are very worthwhile, and they really give us an idea. Look, we're working down here, okay? And if we're building the Antikorana, we're maybe doing a little better. This is a picture of the egoic lotus, sort of, you know, and the triangular Antikorana. And we always begin by going from the mental unit right into the egoic lotus. And that's the very first stage. And we also, if we're philosophically minded, we might go from the center of the egoic lotus to the monastic permanent atom. But what DK gave us was the projective method. Maybe it's more the first ray method of building the Antikorana. And in a strange kind of way, bypassing the soul, but not really, because all those soul qualities are gathered into a pool of retained energies around the mental unit. And so we have this projection of the multicolored rainbow bridge, but in group form, emphasizing the, what can I call it? In group form, emphasizing the color indigo. And it goes right through the pool of energies and on the way up to the very first destination, which is not going to be successful immediately, but that would be the monastic permanent atom. And we learn how to think abstractly. And then we go into a still higher level. Let's see if I can. Okay, hold on. I think I can, says a little engine that could. All right. So here is, that maybe that's the one I'm after. We make the spiritual triad becomes responsive to our upward thrusting line of light. And we get a response from the triad. You know the old story that, it's not just idle. When the prodigal son finally returns home, the father doesn't just wait in the house and have the son knock at the door. He runs forth to greet the prodigal son, which is a kind of little allegory about how there is a response from high levels of the triad and the monad when the prodigal son is demanding a return to his father's home. But, you know, in all practicality, this is where we are, on the higher mental plane and working to achieve some kind of response from the spiritual triad. Now we should, work at it every day. And in the Moria Federation, we do a lot of following of the Tibetans' instructions for Antikarana building. And we will let the Christ and the Buddha and those great others work up here on the cosmic astral and the cosmic mental, which is the great area of experiment for them, while we are struggling down here just to get, let's see what I've got here. Yeah, just to get a response from some of these areas that we cannot yet truly touch. And some of those areas are so high that even the masters cannot touch them. Now that sounds like a surprise, but the Atmic permanent atom and the Buddhic permanent atom are on planes where only the Chohans can stabilize themselves, and not necessarily the masters at all. Well, these are diagrams, and you can get out of them what you think you can, and one day they will be realities to us. And so may that day come soon. Yeah, Joe.
You have a question from Chris. Why are some of the creative hierarchies listed as unknown?
It's mostly because they are so high on the cosmic astral plane that we as human beings cannot know what's really going on there. There's a few little hints, like from page 50 of esoteric astrology, and we see different lineups of different astrological signs. But basically, it's just beyond us. It's just as simple as that. If we're working down here, to make sure we can get a little bit of response from the spiritual triad, then anything that's on the non-articulated, notice he doesn't articulate what's going on the cosmic, astral, and cosmic mental. That's the kind of thing towards which the Lord Maitreya and the Buddha are looking. And they actually, you know the story, they each had a cosmic touch, which is extremely rare. I just don't know how many of their predecessors were able to do that, but the Christ touched an area of the cosmic astral plane from which pure love comes down. And what's the name of that second path? Joe, if you come up with it.
I'll find it.
I'm always forgetting it.
Yeah, I'll look for it. But in the interim, because we don't have a lot of time left, Mira says, it's a beautiful statement she makes. Dear Michael, I've been studying harmonics, the numbers that we divide the 360 degree zodiac to generate the aspects. Is there any relation between harmonics in astrology and the rays? And I was wondering if the 360 divided by 5 generates the quintiles as aspects. Could this number 5 be related to ray 5 by any chance? Forgive me if I'm too far off. And if there is a correlation, then why do we have 7 rays but 9 harmonics?
9 harmonics. I guess it's because the system renews itself after when we reach the number 1 again. So we run through the 9. Matter of fact, you know, you might think there are 7 cosmic paths, but DK tells us, no, there are 9. And now 9 cosmic paths, page 412 in the Rays and the Initiations. Now 9 cosmic paths can be pursued. So it's true, we have only the 7 rays, but we have some kind of Kabbalistic 3 above 7. And you see it right here on this map. I hope you can see it. Here are the 3 on the cosmic cosmic, what's it called, theophire, the logoic plane, and here are the subrays, monadic subrays, the 7. So somehow, in a way, we do go through the full 10. And I'll just say that there seems to be a tendency to divide. I know how you, the 8th harmonic, you know, related to the square, and the 9th to the novile, an unusual aspect, and the 7th to the irrational septile, and the 6th, to the 60-degree angle, and the 5th, I think you're exactly correct that this is the quintile, and there's something soul-related about that quintile. But this whole question of the 7 and the 9, they are, in a way, 2 different systems, and one is based upon the number 10, and the other is based upon the octave. Because, you know, when you look at the notes and you look at the colors, they renew themselves at the number 8. So 7 takes you through the gamut of possible relationships. But when you're looking for a Kabbalistic system, which is 3 above the 7, then you have to go all the way to the 10 and not stop at the 8. And it is reasonable to use both systems to discover, hidden things about the meaning of these numbers. 72, it's a very important one. And when you're looking at all those quintiles, it's supposed to have to do with the genius of the soul in those that are ready for that, okay? Now, it doesn't mean if your chart is filled with quintiles, you are necessarily that. But it does tend to mean that if you have lifted yourself to the degree of evolution where you have soul response, the quintile will be very important. Obviously, it's a huge subject that I'm just trying to scratch the surface here, basically.
The second path is magnetic work. And for those of you who downloaded that little PowerPoint I put in, it's slide 44. And each path is listed there, that with the name and the descriptors. And if you're interested in it, Dwayne Carpenter has lightweaver.com with a dash between light and weaver. And he has all the beautiful renditions, artistic renditions. And he also has the stanzas for the paths.
So magnetic work, that's it.
Yep.
I just don't know why I'm always forgetting it, but I want to tell you, I want to tell you that the Tibetan says many monads on the fifth ray, that is, and then he says fifth ray people take the second pass of magnetic work. And they clean from their high position the normal astral plane. And they use a lot of the color rose. So it's very interesting to read about. And probably what I've done is I have complete. At least I've gone over everything in the rays and the initiations. And the last 100 or so pages is a video commentary where I'm talking about these very things. And by the way, both Gemini and Libra somehow are related to this path of magnetic work and the cleansing of the astral plane below with the rose light. It's most mysterious, and I guess one has to be something of an occult scientist, maybe it helps to do that kind of work. I think, he says at some point, both Gemini and Libra are involved, but I forget which one he mentions first. Maybe he mentions Gemini first, because, what do we have with Gemini? We have the head of the cosmic Christ. So it makes sense that if you're working with the pure energy of love to cleanse the astral plane, our astral plane, with pure rose-colored light, that whole love power is very important. And gosh, you can almost think that somehow Venus would be involved in that with its association with the fifth ray, and the fact that Venus has a strong second ray and its astral body is buddhically conditioned. Not the Earth, no. We don't have buddhic conditioning for the Earth's astral body. But Venus, yes. So just read Cosmic Fire carefully, listen carefully, and the knowledge will accrue. That's all I can say. You just can't help it. You're going to become more knowledgeable about these matters. Okay, is there anything else?
I don't see any other comments or any raised hands except people expressing their thanks.
Yeah, well, I'm very appreciative that you are here. And like I said, you know, I would like to be able to do all those morning programs and everything, but a number of physical things have caught up with me. So I just have to do what I can do. And of course, what I am trying to provide for you is video commentary from Discipleship in the New Age Now, Volume 1, Section 1, Part 3, Video Commentary. That's where I am right now. And I forget how many of those I've done, but I think you will get a lot out of them. They're on the Makara website, and they're also on the Moria Federation channel. I think you'll get a lot out of them because I read every word the Tibetan has spoken, every word. But at the same time, I introduce certain lines of connection, which you may find helpful and, let's just say, illuminating if you're trying to develop that a spherical knowledge that the Tibetan, well, he has it, you know. So we have to learn how to develop it if we're going to work with him and Master Kurumi. Maybe some of the people belong more to Kurumi than to the Tibetan, but at least the Tibetan deals with this wonderful second ray phrase, and you know it because I've mentioned it, meticulous entirety. Meticulous entirety. And where is it? Around page 394 or so of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. Okay, well, I want to thank Joe and Michael Crow for backing me up here. Sometimes I get to feel quite lonely when I'm the host and not knowing what I'm doing. But it's great to see you. And this kind of material will soon be posted by BL and by Harold with Joe's promptings, I guess. And if you want to go more into detail, because I know it's very hard when you hear something maybe the first time, if you want to go a little more into detail, you can do that. It just depends, my friends, on how much time you want to reserve for your studies and how much time you want to reserve for your meditation and how, in the last analysis, you manage to use it all in some kind of service to people. So it lifts them up. The choice of timing is your own, okay? All right. So that's going to be it. And no ohms to run short. And I'll just, I'll stop the recording. And Michael, I think, who is the host, we'll end the program. Tomorrow, the reappearance of the Christ, and looks like it will be a broadcast, YouTube broadcast. Okay, nice to work with you.
And Friday, you have TCF scheduled at 5 p.m. GMT, so let us know if that's going to be on.
If there's any change, well, there'll be TCF, all right. But the question is, what I try to do is, if I have to delay things, I had to delay tonight because a meeting was scheduled. That was a very important one. But then the meeting didn't materialize. So I wasn't going to give you a double indication. I was just going to say, okay, we'll keep it 2 hours later. And we did. And some of you are here and glad to see you. Okay, lots of love, many blessings. And I'll just stop the recording.